Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to yet another edition of Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this September the 17th on the West Coast. Now in the Eastern and Central time zones, it's September the 18th. We got a great guest for you again tonight. Many of you were asking that this fine author and journalist come back and tell us some more about his research. He has written numerous books, which have all reached the bestseller lists. I got to recently view his presentation at the Conspiracy Conference, along with some other fine researchers, and we may talk about that a little bit tonight, too, as well. His current book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, is actually moving up the bestseller charts every time he comes on the air, and we're going to get an update on where his book is, and hopefully the listeners to this show are helping with the sales of that book. It's very interesting information. It's not an accident that several other researchers are coming to similar conclusions. Of course, no one writes or relates the information quite like tonight's guest. With that, I would like to welcome back to Evident Footprints, Mr. Jim Mars. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
How's your book doing, by the way? I know it's doing well. Is it moving up on the charts for you there?
Yeah, after only 2 months on sale, it already hit the extended New York Times bestseller list. I'm not sure if it's still there. I think everybody ran and bought it, and I think probably everybody's still reading it right now, but I'm fairly confident that after they read it and see the information that's presented there, they're going to tell all their friends, and it'll probably pop back up again.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. So at least if you're not bringing home the bacon, you're bringing home the scrambled eggs, right?
Right. Well, at least the information is getting out there, and it's really vital at this time because anybody that's alert and watching what's going on, we realize our economy's in bad shape. It's crumbling, and the big corporations are getting bigger, and they're buying up the littler guys. And pretty soon, I guess we'll just have World Megacorp or something. You know, they'll control everything. You know.
Yes. You know, that brings to mind, Jim, that myself and some other investigative journalists have been talking about the fact that the banks are going to crash, that we know sort of through our research, we can see that that there's a lot of corrupt activity going on with the intention, and this is in the plans. I mean, we're not just researching for the sake of finding out.
This isn't just happening. Yeah. It's not just happening.
It's planned. Yes, and we've been sounding the alarm for a few years on this, and just yesterday, this kind of hit me funny. Glenn Beck on Headline News has a special that's running, and he's talking about how the economy is now starting to fail. I mean, we've been talking about this for 2 years, two and a half years.
Yeah, I've been talking about this for probably about 10 years. What it is, basically, is that if you go back and study the crash of 1929, you'll find that they ballooned up the stock market, ballooned up the credit, and then pulled the plug on it. And it seems to me that's the same thing that's happening today.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed that gold has jumped $80 or so an ounce just in the last day or two.
Yeah, this
which
morning
shows,
it was like
shows,
50.
Yeah, that shows that the savvy investors they're bailing.
Well, we know they plan these things, whether it's gold or whether it's the rate of inflation. I mean, it's always been the head of the Federal Reserve that comes forward and says, well, you know, the market is a bit depressed right now, so we're going to lower the prime rate. And they lower the prime rate, and there's this flood of loans. But what they don't tell us is this money's being loaned, but these people don't intend to pay back the loans. They're going to
And what they're not also telling us is that, you know, they say the government's going to bail out the Fannie Mae and the Fannie Mac, and then, you know, as if the government has any money of its own. The government is us.
Yes.
they're just looting the Treasury is what they're doing.
Yes, exactly. And then you hear that about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. They've hit every cash cow that's there. If you pull these people out and just put them in suspended animation for 5 minutes and said, let's see the books, and you got somebody to go look at the books, I'm sure you'd find out that there wasn't any money in any of the accounts anywhere.
Just electronic blips in the computer.
Yes.
And I saw a report here recently that shows that, you know, President Bush has been selling off public lands. And guess who's profiting? The companies that are facilitating those buyouts. And one of the chief ones is lining the pocket of former President George Herbert Walker Bush, his father. So it just goes on and on. It's the same old people doing the same old things. And we just never seem to quite... you know, snap on what's really happening. And that's not just by accident. It's because these same people control the five major corporations, mega multinational corporations. They control everything we see and hear. Network TV, satellite TV, cable TV, books, magazines, newspapers, even billboards. And, of course, they keep us all distracted. We're all supposed to be worrying about Obama or McCain or Britney Spears or just anything other than what's really going on.
Or Paris Hilton. Let's not forget her.
Oh, of course.
And of course I'm being ridiculous. We shouldn't leave out Anna Nicole Smith either. God rest her soul.
And of course they always start pulling this thing as the football season starts. So a whole lot of people they're distracted checking out their favorite college teams or the AFL, CFL, NFL games, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and that's nothing new either. It's the same thing the Roman emperors did. Kept everybody's minds off of what was happening by throwing circuses and giving them free bread.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in terms of what you are seeing right now, and what you have written, what you've researched, and I know you and I have touched on a lot of the same chords. It may have been different songs, but we hit the same chords. And I know some other researchers. What's interesting is Fritz Springmeier comes to mind, that he had gone down the rabbit hole on the Illuminati families. Now he was more into following the bloodlines than, let's say, the political parties, and I know you've done, I think, an equal amount of both, actually. You know, you've looked at the bloodlines, you've looked at who these people are behind the scenes. Everything is ramping up, even since the last time you've been on the show.
That's true.
Are you seeing it more as the secret society, let's say, political issues, or do you see it as the bloodlines in a struggle with each other and against each other? Because I'm seeing a bit of a tug of war.
Well, of course, there'll always be a struggle for power to see who's on top of the pyramid. So I'm sure there is some struggle going on between the Illuminati families and their corporations. But they all have the same goal, which is to gather power to themselves, control the population, and profit from wars and disasters and everything else that's going along. And of course, we've got a whole new factor right now, which a lot of people are not considering, which is the weather wars. I was writing about the efforts to control the weather way back in the 70s, and you can imagine how much they've progressed today. Some of these hurricanes, some of these things, earthquakes, these things that are happening, I cannot say for certain that they're being manipulated or being man-made, but I can say that they've been working on that technology for a good number of years, and there is some tantalizing evidence to suggest that everything that's happening, for instance, the big earthquake in China, some of the more recent strings of hurricanes that just follow one after another, that these are being generated. And that's not just wild conspiracy talk. A month or so ago in U.S. News and World Report, which is not exactly a radical rag, they had an article stating that scientists could cool the clouds and reduce the power of a hurricane and even redirect it, change its course. Well, and of course the tone of the article was, well, this is a good thing and maybe they can help protect us. But hey, folks, all you have to do is think of the corollary. If they heat the clouds, they can intensify a hurricane and they can redirect its course and use it as a weapon.
Absolutely. You know, I'm kind of glad you brought that up. And I want to share something with you, because this was the last time you were on, it wasn't the appropriate time to share this. And this part of my Barack Obama expose is going up partially tonight and tomorrow. We put up part three on the web yesterday, and part four, which is just on Barack Obama's side of the story, is coming out. Now, I discovered something really, really, how do you say it? It shocking, we'll say. I discovered a child sacrifice in the Obama name, and this is a baby that was born Halloween night. You know how they're into rituals and dates and
Absolutely.
Numerology. Halloween night of let's say Halloween day of 2004. I don't know whether it was day or night, but I do have the date, the 31st of October 2004. This baby was given a social security number, and it died December 25th of 2004, Christmas Day. Baby didn't even live 2 months.
Wow.
Well, now the interesting thing is that when I examine the dates of family members on the maternal side of the family, Stanley Dunham's father was supposedly born 110 years prior to that date that this baby died, on Christmas Day, 1894. So it would be exactly 110 years from the date he was born until this baby died, and that works out to a numerological 11, which to them means one number greater than God. Interesting event occurred the very next day, and they say they published the number 146,000 people died, and that was the tsunami in Indonesia. Interesting thing, because I came to the conclusion that Obama was from Indonesia, mm-hmm. and they perpetrated this earthquake the next day after this child sacrifice. How do I know about the sacrifice? Well, it was reported by a funeral home, and I tripped on the social security number. And when I checked it out, I was amazed that it was an Obama name. So there is ritual, and they use weather manipulation and great destruction, great loss of life to sort of do these sacrificial rituals that they do. And this is of the satanic nature, I would venture to guess. The total death toll that they predicted, along with this event, is 146,000. You add the 1 and the 4, you get a 5. The 5 and the 6, you get 11. So the two dates, 11-11, or the date and the number that they get from the number of people that died. Now, someone can say, oh, that's just a coincidence. They do this all the time. They do this all the time. All the false flag events that we've had throughout history have been worked around numerology, and I'm sure that you've discovered some anomalies yourself with the dates.
Right. Well, I, you know, of course, and I try to stick with as hard and provable facts as I can, so I can't really say for certain that that's what's in play, but I will say this. It really doesn't matter whether those, your listening audience, whether they want to believe in that or not. The point is, these globalists, this oligarchy, this wealthy elite, they do believe in it.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the point I'm making. And this was the very next day after that baby died. Now, one could say, well, that was just a baby that died. Why was it a secret? Why does the baby have the name Obama? And a better question, how did it get the name Obama in Maryland? How did it get that name?
And what do you suppose is the connection between that Obama and the Obama that's running for president?
What do I suspect? The straight line. And connecting the dots. I would submit that it was likely a child sacrifice, that they were performing some ritual that was going to put him in concrete, basically, his mission. Now, it was sometime afterwards, and no one knew about this. But I found this, and it's traceable. It's traceable.
Course,
I'm not making this up.
And, of course, in 2004, hardly anybody in this country had really heard about Barack Obama. And then all of a sudden, he pops up and becomes the one of the leading presidential candidates.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And if you add up all the numbers of October 31st, 2004, you get, again, 11. It's amazing.
The big attack that started everything was on 9-11.
Mm-hmm.
11 seems to play a prominent part in their planning.
Yes. And I found also that many people in the family supposedly died in the 11th month in November. Born in November, died in November. And, of course, is this stuff really provable? It's. I can tell you, I went down the rabbit hole deeper than the rabbits have gone down there in a long time. And
found out there weren't even any rabbits down there.
Well, I've used the expression, I had to come out and brush the turds off myself, you know. The rabbits won't even go down there now. So, I've seen these patterns, okay,
right.
And there's obviously a ritual going on.
Well, and this is where the establishment news media really falls down on the job. They will try to present all sorts of data and facts and statistics and everything else day to day to day, fill up those news shows, and yet very rarely do they ever sit back and say, hey, let's look at the pattern here.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, I had recently I had Ken Adachi on the show, and we were talking about Martin Bormann and Reinhard Gehlen, Otto Skorzeny, Joseph Mengele, all these guys that they turned into spooks. The word for the guys that whose deaths are faked, and then they're operating in the shadows, sort of like a ghost would.
In history. We find one of the classic schemes for avoiding getting in trouble for national leaders or for kings, queens, or whatever is to just feign death. You know, oh, gee, he died. End of story. And in the past, it's always been pretty easy, even for an average guy, to just drop off the map because you could always move and change your name and just assume another life. And of course, today that's gotten very difficult. But with computers and social security numbers and RFID chips and everything else, unless you have the controls of a organized government, because we all know about the government's witness protection program, where that got started to protect people that were going to testify against organized crime. And they, you know, the idea was, well, organized crime would try to take them out, so we have an obligation to protect them. So they created these federal programs where they can give them an entirely new identity, new Social Security, new, all this, and it's all handled through the government. So it's virtually impossible to figure out who these people actually are or where they are. Well, if they have that capability, then is it such a stretch of the imagination that they could take somebody who is one of their minions and who has performed work for them but happened to get caught in the whole thing, for example, like Ken Lay, and then just as he's about to go to prison, just as he's about to face the choice of either going for a long prison term or turning state's evidence and ratting out all the people that he was connected to and that were involved in that whole Enron scam, he conveniently has a heart attack and is cremated, and nobody sees him again, and, well, he's dead, and we'll blame everything on him, and that's the end of that. All of the victims of the Enron scandal that had been bilked out of their money, they all were suing, trying to recover their money, and all those suits were dropped because, hey, he died. And yet there's every reason in the world to consider that he may be just sitting over in on a beach in Fiji or somewhere, sipping Mai Tais and enjoying his retirement under a different name.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if Ken Lay came up and knocked on your door tonight, Don, you know, would you recognize him? Would you know who that was if he says, "Hi, I'm Joe Blow"?
Well, most likely he's gotten plastic surgery or wearing some kind of disguise anyway. But
like E. Howard Hunt, put on a red wig and a fake nose or something, you know.
Well, you know,
so this just goes on and on. This is standard operating procedure, and yet most people listen to the 5 o'clock news and read the newspaper, and they think they're really well informed, and of course they never talk. The media never talks about anything like this, so they, you know, they never even consider that maybe these people aren't really dead.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we heard stories like that about Timothy McVeigh too, the guy that got nailed for
the one and only civilian witness to his execution said that when they carted him out, he was still breathing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hell, he may be sitting over there with Ken Lay sipping drinks.
Yeah.
And you know, let me tell you an interesting story that this goes to show back how far back this goes. I once interviewed one of Jack Ruby's strippers. Jack Ruby, of course, the man who, on national television, shot and killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the accused assassin of President Kennedy. And this stripper said she managed to actually get into the jail and have a few words with Jack Ruby, and she said, "Jack, I'm so sorry about your situation, you know." And he whispered to her, he said, "Don't worry about it." Said, "They're going to tell the world that I died of cancer, but they're actually going to send me off to South America." Okay? Now, for one thing, I personally do not believe that that actually happened. I think Jack Ruby actually was injected with cancer-causing elements, and I think he did die. But the point is, they told him that and to keep him quiet, and he more or less did.
Well,
back in 1967,
it would have been too dangerous for Ruby to shoot Oswald in the presence of all those officers. You know, I didn't see any blood from that shot, and you know, they had the cameras right on that so everybody could see it. And you remember Oswald's mouth opened wide as he got shot.
Well, he actually cried out. There is sound on on film, and I mean, he went, you know, I mean, he gave a pretty good groan.
Yeah, I had heard from someone that actually the CIA took him out, that he hadn't been shot, that was all faked, and they got him into an ambulance, but then they did him in the ambulance.
Well, I think they did him in the jail office because let's look at it objectively. Assuming that he was shot, and according to his autopsy, he had hit 7 vital organs in his gut. And now anybody with any sense knows that with a stomach wound, you do not pump. You try to contain the blood, contain the wounds until you can get to medical help. Now, they were getting ready to transfer him to the county jail anyway. So what would have been the problem to simply throw him in the car and rush him to the hospital? Instead, they dragged him back into the jail office, and then it was like 10 minutes or more to get an ambulance there. And during the time they were waiting on the ambulance to arrive, what are these people doing in the jail office? They're giving him artificial respiration. They're pumping on him. And needless to say, according to the official word, he died in the ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Yeah, it's, you know, they're, well, we know who was behind the whole thing, pretty much.
Same bunch.
It's the same
then,
group of guys.
Then, yeah, you've got these Wall Street minions, these people like John J. McCloy, who was chairman of National City Bank, which is now Citicorp, and prior to World War II, National City Bank was a prime lender of money to Adolf Hitler and the Nazis, and McCloy even sat in Hitler's box seat at the 1936 Olympics. So here's a banker from America who is one of the men bankrolling Hitler and the Nazis. And then after the war, John J. McCloy is named High Commissioner of Germany under occupation. And it was under his reign that thousands of Nazis were had their backgrounds whitewashed and were sent over here and rolled into our military-industrial complex. And further whitewashing took place within the CIA, who was, after the war, was headed by Alan Dulles, John J. McCloy's protege, the guy that was taking orders from him and that was trying to play like him. And then when Kennedy is killed and Johnson names his infamous Warren Commission, who's the two most prominent members? John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles.
Can I ask you a question, Jim? Is John J. McCloy also referred to as Red McCloy? Was his nickname Red? Do you know?
You know, I don't know.
Because I heard that it's Red McCloy became the head I guess you could say he was the chancellor of the University of Texas. And that their business school there it became a major conduit to the banking families. They have a matriculation program, I think, with Harvard, Wharton School of Business. It seems like every time somebody makes it real big, they go to Wharton and they get one of these secret government jobs in finance. I say secret because they become mysteriously successful in a very short period of time. But then I see a tie with the University of Texas and Hurricane Katrina and the multidimensional physics footprints that were left in the Gulf of Mexico that Richard Hoagland had on his website for a while and was on the web a month before Katrina hit. I don't know if you recall that or were even familiar with it, but there were 3 color bars that appeared in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, and this is a month before Katrina hit, and there was a hurricane that showed over New Orleans exactly in the manner in which it hit. So and this was published on the web.
Well, I do know that that same kind of colored striation in the atmosphere was seen in China just prior to their big earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
So so I don't know.
Yes. Yes, that's...
And I, as far as this Red McCloy, as I really don't know if... number one, I don't think that that was John McCloy. But it could have been a family member, but I don't know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I may be mistaken, but I know there was a McCloy that became the head of the business school shortly after all this stuff we're talking about, these assassinations. And it would be, you know, it might just be coincidence, or there might be a direct connection there. But it seems like they've gotten their lion's share of government projects over the years, and
right.
and some of the dark projects. Now, for well, those listeners, I was going to just say, for those listeners out there that are hearing this for the first time, this goes back into the 1920s and the 1930s too, in Nazi Germany, and this ties in with our space program. You want to talk about that a little bit? Some of the things that you've discovered that are not just anomalies, but they're synonymous with what went on during World War II or prior to World War II.
Yeah, well, actually, it goes back to the end of World War I. When we found two German bankers, Max Warburg and his brother Paul Warburg, even before World War I, Paul Warburg came to the United States and was a ranking member of the conspirators that met on Jekyll Island off the coast of Georgia in 1912. And concocted the Federal Reserve System. Now, what's amazing is that he then went on to head the war funding effort of the United States during World War I when we were fighting Germany over in the trenches in France. And his brother Max remained in Germany and was instrumental in running and funding the German war effort. So we got two brothers, you know, operating on both sides of this war. And also, it was Max Warburg who was, as part of German intelligence, helped Lenin pass through Germany, even in time of war, and sent him on into Russia, where he captured the revolution, the Russian Revolution, for the Bolsheviks, which became the communists.
Mm-hmm.
So they basically created communism in Russia, and then when it threatened to get out of hand, they then turned to Germany as a block to the spread of communism, and they, the same people and the same companies, and companies in the United States like Standard Oil, the Rockefeller's oil firm, IBM, General Motors, Ford Motor Company, AT&T, all of these American companies were instrumental in creating Hitler and creating Nazism in Germany prior to the war. By the way, Max Warburg also sat on the board of directors of the Hamburg America Steamship Line, which was later identified as a key conduit for Nazi saboteurs and spies and Nazi propaganda into the United States. Interestingly enough, also, one of his fellow board members was Prescott Bush, the grandfather of our current president. So this goes way back to the same families, the same bloodline, and they've been manipulating and orchestrating for at least a century, probably more if you want to go back to even older orders and secret societies. And that's why that these same people who funded National Socialism in Germany, the acronym of which is Nazi, after the war, they simply set up shop over here and continued to fund efforts to turn the United States, that at the time was a democratic republic, into a national socialist state that it's become today. And since national socialism is Nazism, that's why I entitled my book The Rise of the Fourth Reich. I don't want your listeners to get the idea that I'm trying to say that goose-stepping Germans came over to this country after the war and took over the country, because that's not the story. although many unreconstructed Nazis were brought into this country. We know that it was Nazi scientists that were at the heart of our early space program. We know they brought their mind control and psychiatric experts over here. We know they brought their gun control laws over here. The granddaddy of them all, the 1968 gun control law, was nothing more than just the Nazi gun control law of 1933, reworked slightly. And we know that's the case because Senator Dodd, who pushed that legislation, had been at the Nuremberg war crime trials, and just several months before he introduced the 1968 gun control laws, he had asked the National Archives to provide him with a copy of the Nazi gun control laws, and researchers have found that they're virtually word for word. So they simply have imported National Socialism into this country, and of course today they're not going to call themselves National Socialists, because anybody who knows anything would go, well, they're a bunch of Nazis. So they have chosen to portray themselves over the last 8 years as neoconservatives, neocons. But so when you hear neocons, just consider that what they really are National Socialists. And this, Don, is what has caused such a problem for the traditional constitution-based conservatives, particularly in the Republican Party. And they are just good old homegrown conservatives. They believe in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. They believe in less government, decentralized government. They believe in strong border security, family values, an equal but basic education system, et cetera, et cetera. And so they are scratching their heads today because they keep voting for these candidates who call themselves conservatives or neoconservatives, and yet they don't get any conservatism. They get more government spending, more government control, socialist programs over and over again, no border security. And so they can't quite figure it out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm seeing the same thing with Obama. In fact, I see the same connection with Jesuit secret societies. With Obama's mother, they don't disclose this. This is something I discovered, and I discovered it by the dress she's wearing in the picture. She's got on a school dress. She's about 10 or 11 years old. And embroidered on one of on the left shoulder is the letters NDJ, Notre Dame de Jamour, which is a Lebanese school in Beirut. Now the Kansas story.
I would venture to guess that school promoted socialism.
Oh well, I think more than that, Marxism definitely. Socialism, Marxism, yeah. And likely fascism.
He's following in the footsteps of Hillary Clinton, who is a young college student, defended the Students for a Democratic Society, the SDS, and other leftist radicals. She was intimately involved with that. So what we're seeing here, Don, is that typical Illuminati methodology. You play both ends against the middle. So you vote for McCain, you're going to get right-wing socialism, national socialism, or you vote for Barack Obama, you're going to get left-wing socialism. You're going to get socialism either way you vote.
But it's the same people pulling the strings.
It's the same people behind them. For example, Obama's foreign policy advisor is Zygmunt Brzezinski, head of the Trilateral Commission, which was founded in 1972 by David Rockefeller, and other members of the more secretive Council on Foreign Relations.
Yeah, Henry Kissinger,
Yeah, and so then you look at McCain, you find his chief advisor is Henry Kissinger and other members of the Council on Foreign Relations. So you're going to get the same results no matter who you vote for. That's why I'm paying more attention and beginning to agree more and more with this movement that says there ought to be another choice on the ballot that says none of the above.
That's right. We could say Jim Mars.
Well, what do you think would happen, Don, if more than 50%, say 60, 65% of the public voted none of the above? Then what are they going to do?
Well, they'll still fudge. They'll blame it on hanging chads, you know.
That's right. That's right. They'll just disenfranchise 30-40%, so they knock it back under and say that whoever the leader was actually won. Or they take it to the Supreme Court, which has now been packed by these past presidents who are all part and parcel of the same bunch, and they're, you know, they are regularly determining what our laws will be, no matter how the laws were written.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Well, there's...
Although I will have to give them a kudo. I think it was back in June when the Supreme Court, after years of dragging their feet and not addressing the issue, finally came out and ruled that the Second Amendment actually, they reaffirmed that the Second Amendment actually refers to the right of individuals to own guns.
Well, that you're referring to the case in Washington there,
Washington's gun control law.
Yeah.
But well, that sounds like a real victory until you look at it closely, and there's so many loopholes and catchphrases in that in their decision. They said, yes, the individual has the right to own firearms, but local and state, national government has the right to set all these conditions and demand all this paperwork and da-da-da-da-da. So, you know, basically we're right back where we started from. And again, I might point out that... what they've been trying for and what essentially they have now and will get worse in coming years is that to go and buy a gun, you have to fill out all that paperwork. You got to fill out 2 and 3 pages of stuff, your address, your social security number, your driver's license number, your, you know, you have to answer all these questions. Are you a felon? Have you ever been a felon? You know, and pretty soon it'll probably be which political party do you belong to? But the main thing is that when right now today, according to the laws, you basically register when you buy a gun. And this is the methodology in tyrannical countries, whether it was communist Russia or Nazi Germany or fascist Italy, is that once the guns are registered, then it's no big deal to come around, outlaw them, and then come around and say, our records show that you have this gun, that gun, and we're taking them up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got gun confiscation, and I don't want everybody to think that I'm just a good old boy down here in Texas thinks everybody ought to have a gun because it's fun and we can go out and shoot things, and that's not really the deal. The founding fathers specifically put in the Second Amendment, and in the Federalist Papers, you can read all of their thoughts and all their comments about this, and they made it very clear that the right to own a firearm was not essentially about hunting or sport shooting. It was about the right of the people to defend themselves against their own government if it got out of hand. And this is one of the things that's kept America as free as it is up till now, although they have, if people stop and think about it, they, especially in recent years, they've made a very concerted effort to try to outlaw guns, try to take up guns, try to confiscate guns. And, of course, all of that starts with gun registration, which we now have, except, of course, for the criminals, people who are not law-abiding citizens, and they can always go buy just about anything they want to out of the trunk of a car if they have the cash.
Yeah, they promote that just to keep the wheels greased.
Well, they keep the honest people registered or... unarmed, while the criminal gangs and the corporate goons like Blackwater, they're heavily armed and trained.
Yes, exactly. Well, we see parallels to what went on in Germany. Of course, what we have in our history and what is really going on are two different things, as you and I well know, and writers like Webster Tarpley, who have studied the history There are some companies that have sort of slipped through the cracks in taking the blame for what went on, and they're actually still in business today. One of the companies, you know, you hear everybody say, well, Fritz Thyssen supported Hitler. Well, he funneled money to Hitler, that's for sure. One of the companies and the families, the Illuminati families that you never hear about, is the Koops family, or people in the United States would pronounce that Krupps. They made ammunition.
K-R-U-P-P.
K-R-U-P-P-S. Yes.
Uh-huh.
They make coffee makers and kitchen appliances, but they go into many other areas, and they go into weapons and ammunition and that. And they made a fortune during the war. Now, these old families became part of the Abwehr. They financed the underground SS, which they brought to Oklahoma City. And a lot of people aren't aware of that, but here we have a president, our 41st president, took control of that group in 1978. And from 1976 until 78, while Admiral Wilhelm Canaris, who was living in Shawnee, Oklahoma, teaching law at Oklahoma Baptist University. Kissinger took over for him when he became ill, and then Bush took over in 1978. So we had someone who actually was in the White House as a vice president, was running the CIA, and he was working with the underground foreign intelligence agency, which was really the SS come alive,
The
United States.
It was the Nazis, right?
Yes, it was the Nazis.
And, of course, his father, Prescott Bush, a powerful senator from Connecticut, was actually prosecuted in late 1942 by the U.S. government under the Trading with the Enemies Act for being nothing but a financial front man for Hitler and the Nazis. But George Jr., or George Herbert Walker, his son, who you have quite an interesting take on, actually began his work even before he became director of the CIA. It goes back to 1972 when Richard Nixon, who was put into public office with Nazi money, pretty well wiped out the leadership of the Republican National Committee, except for George Herbert Walker Bush, who he named chairman of the Republican National Committee. And it was at that time that they began to roll these unreconstructed Nazis, these National Socialists, into the Republican Party. That was the birth of neoconservatism, which is actually nothing less than National Socialism.
Yes. And that's the point where they turned Otto Skorzeny into a spook in Madrid. He supposedly died of cancer. And Bormann, again, Martin Bormann, Reinhard Galen, Joseph Mengele, and Hitler himself was here. Hitler was here until 2004, when he died in Clinton, Maryland. Actually, Seat Pleasant, Maryland, at the Clinton Nursing Home is where he died.
Well, that's interesting, because I figured he'd be in Colorado, because prior to World War II, Hitler owned several thousand acres in Colorado.
He was in Colorado. He was also in California and Oregon and Wyoming and Montana. Specifically, he was up at Glacier National Park. A guy up there says he was coming and going there for 30 years. 30 years he was seen there at Glacier National Park.
A lot of people listening probably are unaware of all the hidden history, probably think, well, what in the world are they talking about? Everybody knows Hitler died in the bunker in 1945. And yet, I can't guarantee you what happened to Hitler, although there's every reason in the world to believe that he survived World War II. But the thing I want to share with you, Don, is that there was a New York Times reporter named Paul Manning, who wrote Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, and actually had arranged a meeting with Bormann down in South America. And Bormann was actually quite proud of the fact that he had helped create this worldwide global corporate empire that has since gained more and more power for the National Socialists of the Nazis. But at the last minute, Paul Manning traveled down there and was supposed to have a face-to-face meeting with him, but Mueller, the head who had been head of the German Gestapo and was the chief of security for Martin Bormann, nixed the whole thing and said, no, we don't think we want to bring all that out right now. We don't want the public to get wind of what's really going on. And so he put a stop to the visit and interview between Paul Manning and Martin Bormann. But Paul Manning, who was a very credible reporter and well-regarded in the profession, said, nevertheless, while he was down there, he actually did meet and see Hitler's wife, Eva Braun. So if Eva Braun survived the war, then there's even more compelling evidence to think that Hitler might have survived.
Well, Skorzeny describes, I'm trying to think of the pilot's name now, but it's on the tip of my tongue.
Anna Reich. Yeah, Anna Reich.
Anna Reich. She picked up Hitler and Skorzeny and Eva Braun, flew them to Austria before taking them to Spain, and then the claim was by Skorzeny that they went to Argentina via submarine, and they were accompanied with a large amount of gold as well.
That was hidden away for them by Juan Perón and Evita Perón.
That's correct. And when Evita died, she willed $100 million in gold to Otto Skorzeny, who was her boyfriend. And it was a strange relationship. And normal people think, that wouldn't happen with the leader of a country. Absolutely, they do that. Absolutely. They're heavily into wife swapping and husband swapping and homosexuality. So it was very, very, very probable. Now, Skorzeny claims that the sheriffs, meaning the Bushes, stole that money. The way he put it is he got screwed. And so... So he finally came out and spilled the beans before he died, admitting to Tesla's murder, admitting to vast sums of money that had been transported around the globe. And really, it's the reason why you've got so much financial chaos right now. They're all trying to get their hands on the gold. And you had written about that. You were doing the research on it.
Right.
Actually, we both were.
Yeah. Well, and, I try to tell people that we're operating under the golden rule. Whoever has the gold makes the rule.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, Jim, we're out of time.
It's really flashed by, hasn't it?
It's flown by, and I know you have to get your beauty sleep, and I promise not to keep you on over an hour. I want to... recommend to folks that they get your book.
If you've been boggled by what Don and I have been talking about, then I would strongly urge you to get my new book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich. And then if you still think there's some holes there, then go back and get my previous work, The Rule by Secrecy, and you'll find the firm documentation for most of what we've been talking about.
Yep. Now, there is some of this in some other books, too,
There's plenty of other sources. Yeah, in fact, what's interesting is that, Don, you've been pursuing one line of investigation, and I've been pursuing another one, and we've never truly compared notes, have we? And yet, we pretty much arrive at the same conclusions.
That's exactly the point I was making. And this is why I point out, a few other researchers are doing the same thing.
Right.
I love your work.
There's others seeing the same thing. But I think it's important to follow the line and the money tracking back to the Nazis, because today everyone kind of understands that this country's gotten off track and that we're doing some things we probably shouldn't be doing. And we've got some people in leadership positions that are highly questionable, and yet nobody quite knows what to do about it because they're all confused. The liberals blame the conservatives. The conservatives blame the liberals. Democrats blame Republicans, and vice versa. The true constitutional conservatives can't figure out why that they vote for conservatives, and yet they get these socialist programs. And both sides cannot understand, liberals and conservatives alike can't understand why that if we're supposed to be afraid of these terrorists, we're in the middle of a so-called war on terror, and that we have to be afraid of terrorists coming to our country, how come they haven't done anything to secure the borders? They just keep everybody conflicted and divided, and nobody can quite figure out what's going on. And I think it's important that we finally do our homework and come to understand that these globalist fascists, and I use the term advisedly because the dictionary tells us that fascism means the blending of state government power along with corporate power.
Yes.
In fact,
that's
in my book, The Rise of the Fourth Reich, Mussolini, who's credited with coining the term fascism because it comes from his black-shirted fascistas, he said that may not actually be the correct term, fascism. He said the more correct term is corporatism. And I think everybody today understands that these giant corporations, banking corporations, is what's running this country today. In fact, in Nazi Germany and fascist Italy, what happened was that the government gained control over the corporations, and it was that blending of state and corporate power that that created fascism. Today in modern America, the corporations are largely funded and controlled by these Nazis who had the whole loot of Europe, and even possibly including the legendary treasure of Solomon. They have simply created corporations, and they have taken over control of the state. So we do have fascism. And so it's interesting because today most people are kind, considerate. They don't want to look badly at people because of their race or their religion or even their political affiliation. But the one group that is still politically correct to hate and vilify are the Nazis, and that's who these people are. So let's all stand up, red, white, red, blue, yellow, whoever, Christian, Jew, Muslim, it doesn't matter. If you're an American, let's all, true Americans, stand up and point the finger where it belongs, at these National Socialist, in other words, Nazis.
Yes, now they're masquerading,
oh, yeah.
Just to muddy the water a little bit. We really have Zionists. We have this cross-section of people who are representing fascism and communism and socialism, calling themselves Zionists, and they're controlling the media, they're controlling the banks.
Right.
And
if you try to criticize what they're doing, then they tar you with the brush of anti-Semitism. Oh, you're against Semites. Of course, I try to tell them, oh, I'm not an anti-Semite. I can get along just fine with the Arabs.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't realize that Semites include the Palestinians, the Jordanians, and the other Arab indigenous population of that area of the Middle East. And a lot of the so-called Zionists that are not Hebrews. They're not Semites. And furthermore, a lot of them aren't even Jewish. There
yeah.
A lot of them are, but not all of them. And that, again, that's how they've misdirected everybody. They try to get everybody thinking, well, this is a worldwide communist plot. No, it's a worldwide Jewish conspiracy. No, No. And you're right, Don. It would take another complete program to go into the history, the background, and the documentation that shows that Zionism at the very top, we're right back to the same folks. And, of course, the reason it'd take a lot of explanation is because most people are not ready to understand that the Zionists were in cahoots with the National Socialists in Germany, the Nazis, and actually, if not encouraging, certainly abstain from interfering with the Holocaust, because what happened there basically was that in under the Nazi rule, they did get rid of the Jewish Orthodox rabbis, priests, and religious leaders who were the biggest opponents to Zionism. And so, yeah. But that's an incredible story that rarely gets told, and I'll have to admit I usually duck that one because I have no problem with the Jewish faith. When growing up in Texas, many of my closest friends were Jewish, and I never thought a thing about it because I just thought, well, they went to a different church. They go to this synagogue over here. I had a lot of Catholic friends. They went to the cathedral, the Catholic church over here. I had a lot of friends that were Baptist and Methodist. Yeah, okay, fine. You, whatever religion, is good for you, that's fine enough. And no, we should never discriminate against someone solely on the basis of their race or their religion. But hey, Zionism, as you well know, Don, is a political movement that was begun and has been pushed forward by these globalists in their effort to get a foothold in the oil-rich Middle East. And yes. It's all been about money, it's been about power, and it's been about who can control the resources of the Middle East. And yet, almost any kind of opposition to this political movement has been squelched in this country because, number one, everyone is hesitant to stand up and be accused of being an anti-Semite, anti-Jewish, and also because the Zionists have gained almost total control over the corporate mass media. And again, we're talking about the same people, the same global fascists who are trying to bring the once free Democratic Republic of the United States into their new world order, which would be the North American Union, a socialist-based regime that would be running Canada and the United States and Mexico and some of the Caribbean nations. And so, that certainly, I would think, should be, number one, considered news, and number two, should be considered a subject worth debating.
Absolutely. And let's not forget the secret societies either, Jim.
Well, exactly. And a lot of these people are members of the secret societies. We don't have all night, so we can't go person to person, name to name. And there are, gray areas where you have people who you're not sure, where their allegiance is or why. Some of them are part of the bloodline. Some of them are in it for the money. Some of them are in it for the prestige. And yet, when you get closer and closer to the top of the power pyramid, you find that you're dealing with the same families, the same bloodlines, and the same corporations and the same multinational companies, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So we need to just start identifying those people and standing up to them before we lose every bit of freedoms that we ever had. And we've gone over your time, I'm sure, and I do have to sign off. And Don, I want to tell you, it's been a pleasure as always, and we've covered a whole lot of ground. And again, I told you this, I think, before we went on the air. My motto is, none of us is as smart as all of us. So let's just all stand up as Americans and start demanding that we return to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, so that each and every one of us and our children and our grandchildren can enjoy the freedom and individual liberty that was handed down to us by the pretty smart founding fathers of this country.
Yes, that's a well said motto you have there. Mine is, just remember, wherever you go, there you are.
That's true. And we'll
leave it at that. Jim,
okay,
it's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to having you on the show again. Good luck with your book. Folks, go visit Jim's website, jimmars.com. And get his books. The man needs to eat like the rest of us.
Well, it's not only that. I'd appreciate the chance to eat, but it's also about spreading the knowledge so that people can understand what's happening so they can figure out what they, as an individual, could do about it.
Yes, you know I'm just kidding. Of course.
Right.
It is about the message, and your work is much appreciated. You know that for me personally. The style, your approach, and your just unrelenting search for the truth, and the fact that you're finding it and bringing it forward, we're grateful for what you're doing.
Well, thank you, Don. It's a pleasure to be with you. Good night.
Okay, you have a good night, and I'll say to the listening audience, you have been listening to Evident Footprints with our special guest, Jim Mars. Again, his website, jimmars.com. Is a really cool place to visit. You can check out his books. He's got some interesting tidbits posted there, articles, some archives. Make sure you have your speakers on when you go to his site. It's always a thrill just to be on the home page. And special thanks to Don Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and Seth for doing the sound. Tomorrow night, there has been a change in the schedule. I'm going to have Pastor Matthew Stephen and also Stephen Benning on the show. And Billy Woodard will be making up that extra date sometime in October. So tomorrow, we have some more prophecy coming forward. You're going to want to listen to tomorrow's show, and I want to thank you for staying tuned in tonight with us. And again, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.